The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love in Sarah's kitchen.
Welcome one and all to the DL Debate. Thanks so much for tuning in now on Highland Radio or listening back via podcast on highlandradio.com, Spotify or iTunes. It was semi-final weekend, Dublin v Cavan and Mayo v Tip. I was to be joined by Cian Mackey for a bit of balance on the Dublin-Cavan game. If there was any balance, the Dubs did what they usually do, won a handy game. But thankfully, I'm joined by former Dublin great, now top pundit. And there's a reason he's continually back on our screens. He's good at what he does. It is, of course, Cian Whelan.
Hey, Brendan, how's it going?
The very best, Cian. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Good, yeah, not about it.
I was just thinking back, the last time I actually was talking to you about a pint up in Donabate, your mum and dad and all was there, I ran into you by accident. It was just before the whole lockdown started. They were good times. We were heading, myself and Traza were heading to Italy, and we stopped in there the night before.
Yeah, it seems a long time ago now, but yeah, you walked in the door and I was saying to myself, that's hardly the venue, is it? What is he doing in Donabate? Yeah, absolutely. We'd have to do it again sometime.
It's a lovely place down there, Cian.
Yeah, well, I suppose I'm out here for 10 years. I would have obviously originally in Mahoney, but out by the sea, I suppose we have the beach. We're out in a little kind of peninsula on our own, and it's a nice place to bring the kids up, all right, you know what I mean? And a good LGA club here as well, vibrant, getting off the ground, and a lot of increase in population, of course, as well. But yeah, no, good. Hopefully, we'll certainly do it again. I'm sure you'll be back down this way.
I'll be giving you a shout, Kate. And tell me, what about the club there? Are they pulling on you for a bit of coaching?
I look after the young lads team, Brennan. Yeah, my young lads were 15, so I've had them since they've been 3 or 4.
Right.
So I'm with them 10 or 11 years, and we've up through the ranks and played fail. And obviously this year disruption for them. It's an awful pity at that age group, lads 15, 16, just itching to play football. I think we managed to play, I think, with 4 or 5 games this year. That's all, you know what I mean? But good. It's great living that. Going through that journey again, you know, you go those days when you were a kid and starting off playing, they really are the best days of your life before you're put into that pressure of inter-county football or winning stuff. When you get to adult level, it's those first 9-10 years coming through the academy and play juvenile football, you can't beat us. So it's great enjoyment, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting, Kieran. That's a nice thing to do. Actually, funny, a fella from England text. I was over with the Sons of Erin. My dad played for them years ago, and I was over there a year when I was like 18 to 19, and some guy just sent me a message on Twitter randomly last night. I said that back then. It was just back in the days when it was just play a match and pints. There was no blanket defence or no sit-in for half the year, etc. But good times. Wilo, tell me, you're going well with RTE there. You had the gloves and scarf on the last. It was a frosty atmosphere over the weekend. But tell me, just around the Cavan game, Wilo, did you see anything else happening other than what happened in the game? And were you a bit disappointed with Cavan in terms of maybe mixing it up and going long against Dublin?
Yeah, listen, it's so difficult, Brennan. You know, like, coming up against the Dubs, I said this in the build-up, like, obviously we were expecting you boys to be down here this weekend. That was the talk. I don't know what happened, but you know, coming up against Dublin is a different level in terms of the intensity that they play at. And all the teams, watching the teams for the Leinster Championship, you know, you see guys that get the ball, they've 1 or 2 seconds on the ball, they can look up, they can see whether they're going to take a kick pass, take the man on, lay it off. When you play against Dublin, you've about 1 second, you know what I mean, to actually make that decision. And I kind of compare it. It's like remember when we played Aussie Rules and you were doing the training and the tackle was in, and while you're doing the training before you go over to Australia, you know, you have that couple of seconds because we're not accustomed to the game. And then when you go and you play against the Aussies, bam, they hit you and nail you straight away, and you're kind of your head's in a spin and you're looking around going, where did that come from? It's similar to that. And that was my fear for Cavan coming into the game. You knew that they'd bring the work rate, you knew they'd bring the intensity, you knew they'd bring that heart from the Ulster Championship, but they would have taken massive belief from beating Donegal, and because I think Donegal looked a little bit starstruck that day. They didn't really know what kind of hit them. And Cavan's intensity and their ability to just share hunger and desire. And you knew they were going to bring that, but whether it was going to be enough for the Dubs, was always going to be a challenge. And they started quite well, and they kicked their first 3 points out of three, and you're kind of saying, well, at least they're being economical up front. But you just got a sense in that first 20 minutes that the game was being played in the Dublin, you know, attacking half, and Cavan were working hard to try and limit Dublin scoring opportunities. And then when they were getting as far as midfield, Dublin were turning them over. And when Dublin turn you over, they generally, they'll get a shot off and the ball goes over the bar. And while they were hanging in there, you know, 5 points at half-time, I thought they had soaked up a hell of a lot of pressure in that first half. And you coming out in the second half, you're thinking, it's a question of whether they're really going to be able to sustain this pressure. And then the third quarter, 5 points for one. And again, I think three of those points came from Cavan turnovers in the middle of the park. So just living with that intensity just proved to be a challenge. You know, like, they did cut hold. Kieran Brady particularly was excellent in the first half. He probably showed up a little bit of vulnerabilities that Dublin were a little bit open there. John Small was kind of pulled out of that position, and they were trying to drop someone off to protect the full back line. But Kieran Brady got in a few times, but he just didn't have enough support runners, I think, to create those opportunities. But they held in there. But I always felt it was going to be a really tough task, because the Dublin team were just operating at a different level.
And do you think, Kieran, you know, training wise, it obviously all comes back to the training pitch, you know, because Dublin are operating at a level above the games that they're going to play, which is a bit frightening for everybody out there. I mean, you've seen the human side of football with Kerry losing this year, and then with Donegal. You've seen a drop in their level of performance, which doesn't ever seem to happen at any, you know, it might happen for short periods and then there's interchange. But Dublin seem to be so methodical and so good constantly at what they do, especially in Croke Park. And it's that turnover. It just doesn't seem that, for against Donegal, I think Donegal, if you valued the team, if you rated the team in the Ulster final, I would say it was something around about a 4.5 out of 10. And yeah, it allowed Cavan, who played really well, to win the match. Whereas with Dublin, they never seemed to drop anywhere near, which all comes back to the training pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they have, you know, listen, there's been a lot of debate over the weekend about money and all the advantages and all that sort of, and that's a deeper conversation. But, like, no one can deny Dublin don't have certain advantages. They do. We always have them. But what I think they've done is, like, the 2011 victory, followed by Jim Gavin coming on in 2013, it allowed them to really foster a culture of excellence and leadership within the group. And they kind of set their own standards themselves. And you can develop that template when you've been successful. And you keep your feet on the ground and you don't get complacent and you don't get ahead of yourselves. And they know exactly what they're trying to achieve, and they have a template. And anybody that wants to make that team has to meet that standard. And I think that's brilliant when you have the depth and you have the quality of players. You know, not every county probably can afford to do that, because you're still reliant on your one or two maybe marquee players. And if they drop or they take their eye off the ball or, you know, don't lead like they do lead, managers probably still have to play them. Where Dublin, just they have that, they foster that culture of excellence, and you have to meet that standard. And it particularly comes down to their work rate and their tackling. And they're also very, very good at the kind of the one-on-one with the plus one coming in, and yeah, the timing, yeah, when a guy has a guy under pressure and the second guy knows when to actually execute and get in and squeeze that player. And they've done a fair bit of that, I'd say, on the training field, in terms of that turnovers are so critical to them in the middle third. And Mayo, to their credit, are probably the next best at it. And again, similarly squeezed Tipperary, particularly in that middle sector yesterday. Like, that was kind of one of the trends of the weekend, that it was that high level of intensity and turnovers that there was just a gap between Dublin, Mayo and Tip and Cavan.
Yeah, and of course 111 from Dublin scores coming direct on turnover, which seemed to be a huge thing. And I know Cavan are only going down to three and Tipper three. It just looked like in certain positions they hadn't got the power, the ability to withstand the force that was coming at them, Kieran, which again goes back to the training ground. You mentioned marquee players there, you know, in counties where, like, the likes of a Jack McCaffrey was there, if he goes, you know, it's a huge hole. You think of, yeah, and we never see Michael Dara at all now. I mean, Connolly going down, the Brogans. You know, players that you said were marquee, the Dublin system, it's as if nobody, and even a couple of players, it doesn't really matter. And of course, Jim Gavin goes, And you'll know there on the ground there, we look, I mean, Desi comes in with his all his own backroom team, and everybody's like, God, will there be a chance? Yeah. You know, it's just on par again. You know, Desi's a great guy. He's a great success underage as well. I had no doubt that there wasn't going to really drop with Dublin. If anything, he was going to look for more.
Yeah, and you could probably argue that he had looked for more. And listen, the frightening thing, I suppose, with Saturday night is it probably wasn't the perfect form. Some of them were probably sloppy in the last third a couple of times and turned over more ball that he would like, and he alluded to that afterwards. But you could argue that you could make the argument that Dublin are kind of better this year. And when you just look at their foreign players and you look at the role he's kind of given Kilkenny, the role he's given Conor Collin to come out deeper, and we saw him winning kickouts the other night. Dean Rock looks like he's on top of his game. He's introduced Sean Bugler, who, you know, I had Sean on development squads here in Dublin, and he always stuck out as a serious talented footballer. I always compared him to Dermot Connolly in terms of his balance and his capabilities, and he's going to get better. He's only going to get better. He's only heading in one direction. And you've got probably, arguably, the best midfielder that's possibly nearly ever played the game at this point. Like, he's moving into that space. And a guy who makes it look so easy, who just glides along the ground, he never looks like he breaks a sweat, and has brilliant feet to step inside players. When he gets in front of goal, his accuracy is probably 85-90% for Fenton, and he's now scoring 3 points every game, and it's kind of just considered to be the norm. Yeah. You know what I mean, for a midfielder. So the current crop of players are as good as anything that went before them. You could make the argument that Cluxton and Fenton are probably the two clutch players, that if something happened to them, you know, in the build-up to the All-Ireland final, say, for example, it could create a problem for Dublin. Mm. But outside of that, you can see them coping, you know, like the McCaffrey. Now, I suppose it comes with a little bit of caveat for anything that Dublin haven't really been tested either. And yeah. I know I'm not being disrespectful to Cavan Rules for champions and stuff like that, and came up in the crest of a wave. But you know, you look back at the All-Ireland finals, and Mayo probably should have beaten them in 16, possibly could have beaten them in 17. Kerry could have beaten them last year. Opportunities were there. And so has the question really been asked, is McCaffrey a loss or is Dermot Connolly a loss? True. Possibly not, but on the evidence that we're seeing, it certainly looks like they have the bodies to be able to cope, and they look like they're continuing on an upward curve. And Desi probably didn't have to change a whole lot, as I said, alluding to it, that culture of excellence and how the players drive the agenda. And that's so hard to create, that atmosphere. You know, it's like the New Zealand thing, and we've all been in dressing rooms, and you know, only 15 guys can play, and there's always guys left out, and there's always a little grievance. And if you don't have that culture spot on, cracks will appear. And Dublin have that, but it has been driven by the players, you know, probably led by Cluxton, and then the likes of Kilkenny and Fenton.
Yeah. As you said, Kieran, once that vibe is in there, it's there. It's a core thing, so it doesn't really matter then players or even management who comes in and out, because it's there. I felt a bit sorry for Desi. I wonder what you think about this too, Kieran. Analysing Dublin now, it does get a bit repetitive. Is it hard for you as well? I mean, you would much more, if it was Donegal, I think they would have given them a bit of a game. At least you would have some talking points. As you said, now Dublin are going to, I'll not say cold in the final, because, you know, they're going to have everything right. They're going to be right. But certainly if Mayo do rock them at a time, the first time they're going to feel that is in the final.
Yeah, like, it's kind of, what's to say, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and getting the same results. Do you know what I mean? They kind of contradict that in that they do the same thing all the time and they get the same results. And that word that Jim Gavin always referred to, kind of the process, you know what I mean? But the only thing you look at going into the final, Brennan, is that if you go back to the first half last year in the semi-final, I touched on this yesterday, that we know that 12-minute period where Dublin hemmed them in and conned it in behind and got the two goals and it was game over, and it was like that 12 minutes was portrayed as just Dublin turn in the screw on Mayo and blitz them and it was game over. But up to half time, in terms of intensity, Mayo had matched Dublin and turned them over on numerous occasions and had put them on the back foot and brought a massive amount of energy to it. And that would be the positives that I think Mayo will be focusing on, because that's only 12 months ago and they're coming with a relatively new team. Whether they can do that for 70 minutes and sustain that pressure for 70 minutes is the big question mark, you know. But Mayo, to me, look like the team that is best equipped. Like, certainly, I love the direction Donegal were taking. I thought they were moving really well, and the quality of players and the physicality that they had, and the ability, the range of scorers, you know, you weren't kind of over-reliant on any individual players, had a good system. And maybe Donegal just became a little bit predictable, I don't know, and Cavan were able to find a way around it, and they saw weaknesses against Tyrone where Donegal looked a little bit exposed at times in the second half, where Tyrone could have opened up for goal chances, and Cavan went a little bit direct and found a few weaknesses there. But, like, it comes back, with Donegal gone, Mayo are probably, and Kerry gone, Mayo are probably the one team that you would expect.
Yeah. At the start of the championship, though, Gary, we weren't saying that they were relegated. You know, there's a lot of question marks over them.
Yeah.
And yeah, you thought that, you know, we keep wondering, I don't mean this in a bad way, when's Mayo going to kind of go away in terms of being an All-Ireland challenger? They were right up there. When you thought they were at the peak of their powers, they couldn't get across the line. And I know what you're saying, Desi Farrell said that yesterday. There was a bounce of a ball between a few of them All-Irelands, but you always felt that Dublin were the more composed team. And now, yeah, I suppose in this strange year, Ciarán, could it be a thing? I was thinking about Mayo, I was chatting to my neighbour this morning. You know, all this hysteria around All-Ireland final and tickets and all the media, none of that's really going to be happening. They're going to be going out on the, you know, an empty Croke Park. Could it be that the weight of all those previous final defeats aren't hanging on this team? I mean, James Horne has said they couldn't give a toss about those previous games, which he's going to say. A lot of these young lads weren't involved in that, which is true. So they might have a nice mix and a nice blend in there. And I suppose in terms of posting 520, they've certainly got the ability going forward, Ciarán. The whole question mark, as you know, was the amount of openness, the one-to-ones at the back, that a ruthless Dublin, you think, could just take apart. But at the other end of the pitch, they will score heavily, you would think, in the match, which should make it a good final, one that they'll certainly be in for the whole game.
Yeah, and like, the thing, I would fully concur, you know, saying it yesterday, I think, you know, Mayo going into that All-Ireland final, you know, particularly with some new players, and I've seen them, like Joe Connacht, and like McLaughlin at seven is powerful. Tommy Conroy in the middle of the park Tommy Conroy corner forward is the real deal, and he's small in stature, but he is the real deal. He win his own body, take guys on. It kind of reminds me of yourself when you're in your pump, and but even Oisín Mullen at cornerback, you know, there's a bit of adventure about him as well, and he's a good solid cornerback. They've changed their midfield dynamic a small bit in terms of a little bit more legs, and so they've a lot more pace, I think, which you need in the modern game. And going into that All-Ireland final, you know, sometimes, you know, the build-up to the All-Ireland finals, the pressures on the players, the hype that goes with it, a lot of the time you see, it's always the guys that are expected to perform in All-Ireland finals generally don't perform, and somebody comes out of left field and is man of the match. It happens regularly. And so these young kids being able to go up into that environment and not to have that pressure, I think would benefit Mayo. And secondly to that is, I suppose, even if you go back to when Mayo did push Dublin close and Lee Keegan got the goal to put them a point ahead, I think 2017 for Donegal or whatever, and Mayo were in the third quarter, good momentum, but you could nearly sense the crowd and the anxiety, you know, are Mayo going to get over the hill? And I've been there myself many a times on bad days when, you know, we put ourselves in positions to win games before, I suppose, Dublin started this dominant trend, and we didn't win them. Mm. And that anxiety of that last 10, 15 minutes is hugely important. And you can feel, Croke Park can be suffocating in that regard when that anxiety kicks in. So it's probably the best position for them ever to come up. No height, no big deal, young team, an inner belief of older guys that know they can put it up to Dublin. Biggest question mark that I said, and I'm looking at them yesterday, you know, they were able to dictate the terms of the game. Yes, they were able to come out and say, right, we're going to go after Tipperary. We're brave enough. We're going to squeeze you up the pitch. We know it will take risks, and we leave two and two on at back. And, you know, if we concede a goal, we back ourselves to score more up the other end. Tipperary could have got two goals early on and could have changed the dynamic of the game. I would still be concerned from that the Dublin, the capability of that Dublin forward line and how they interchange and how they get in behind that defensively, will they be able to go man-to-man or will they have to protect their defence? And if they have to protect their defence, they're going to take away a little bit of that intensity. So I think that's the clutch call for Horan. Is he confident enough that his lads can hold that Dublin forward line and not concede one or two goals? You know, that's the key thing.
Some big calls, Kieran. Very interesting. I'm just wondering, Kieran, do you ever allow yourself a wee daydream there when you're sitting watching games? Yourself and Fenton in midfield there, and that team now, you would be hard to stop them, my man.
Yeah, I was saying to someone the other night, and I said, I was glad he wasn't around when I was playing, because I wouldn't have got me game. And I wouldn't have even got me game for the club. You know what I mean? Himself and Howard, you know, they went to like two or any men.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, listen, you do. Like, Jesus, he would have been a joy to play with, no doubt about it. Because he's just, I think the frightening thing, he just seems to be getting better.
Yeah. He's in cruise control.
I think he's only 27, so he's like still coming into, he's still in his prime, so. He's just phenomenal, and what I've enjoyed watching about him is like Brian Fenton, the 2015, wasn't really the best fielder of the ball. He wouldn't have been dominating the skies. He was very comfortable on the ground and that sort of stuff. But he was a big unit. But now his fielding, the aspects of his game that he's worked on to push himself to improve is just incredible, and it's frightening the direction he's going on.
Yeah, God help the rest of us, Wheelo. Anyway, Kieran, thanks so much for summing up the weekend there for us. And listen, we'll wish you all the best in the final. May the best team win there. And as all we're hoping for now, Kieran, is for you to be able to analyse a proper end-to-end game of football with both teams going at it. That's
well,
what the hope is.
Once I'm not as cold as I was yesterday,
Wrap up well. All right, Kieran. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Said, take care. Always great to get the views of Kieran Whelan there. And now we turn our attention to a former Laois great. I never knew if he was a half-back or a half-forward or a full-forward. It is, of course, Colin Parkinson.
Jack of all trades, Brendan. I've told you before, I'm a poor man's Graham Geraghty. He played everywhere and excelled everywhere, and I played everywhere and didn't excel to the same extent at all.
I always remember you with your Oasis haircut there back in that famous Laois All-Ireland winning minor team there. You were like Ireland's answer to Britpop.
Yeah, Blur or Oasis.
Blur or Oasis, that was the shout. A lot of people won't even know what we're talking about when you say that, Willie. That's the thing, how time moves on. Willie, of course, now you're doing the top show, the GAA, on joe.ie. It's been a challenging year for everybody, Willie. How's the show gone? Have you seen big changes in terms of people's attitudes towards putting out podcasts?
Yeah, it's a weird one, actually. I've noticed their numbers wouldn't be as strong at the moment as what they were before the COVID lockdown. And it's hard to analyse why that is. Maybe, you know, there's no huge crowds at the matches. So maybe that interest in listening to shows the day after isn't there. And people are working from home, so they're not commuting. You know, a huge part of the listenership would be commuters, you know, to work. And that's gone as well. So I don't know. It's difficult. And then there's a sizable enough part of the GAA community that didn't really want any championship to go ahead this year at all. You know, they're obviously very worried about COVID and stuff like that. So when you factor everything in, I don't know. I'm not panicked about it. I want to see what happens next year before I start making any.
Nobody's trying to trim your wages, is what you're telling me.
You might be catching up with me now, Dave. I'm looking over my shoulder here with the Donegal debate.
You know us, we Donegal boys. We're just cut up by beer. We just serve as our own. You're all over your national, my man. Well, it was just, I think that's a good point, because listen, the radio figures have obviously been up, I think, around the country, but I think more people's at home. The radio tends to be on the background. But if you have to actually go and maybe listen to a podcast, a lot of people would have been the thing in the car heading to work in the morning or come back in the evening. You're right. That would make sense.
Yeah, and maybe sport has pushed down. I see Eamon Dunphy's The Stand, and his numbers have gone really strong. But he does shows on COVID, he does shows on Brexit, he does shows on Trump, and they seem to be dominating the news cycle at the moment, you know, rather than a GEA show as such. So maybe it's not. It's what's dominating you know, people's thought processes. And if we should have done a COVID podcast, Brendan, we could have broke all records.
Well, listen, I would say you were coming close to doing a podcast. I've seen you on Twitter a few times railing off about different rules and regulations and lockdowns and what have you.
I think I became a little bit obsessed with it at one little point. I think when you're stuck in the house for so long, you get some sort of cabin fever, and I was spending too much time stressed out about when is this all going to end, you know, and kind of reacting like that. But anyway, I think we see a bit of light at the end of the tunnel.
We do indeed. Well, I'm just thinking about you. Sometimes you get, I suppose, if you put up a subject, listen, everybody's got a point of view, and that's the way of it in the world now on Twitter. And sometimes you get dragged down, I'd say, a bit of a rabbit hole around people's points of views, you know. I mean, everybody's got just some crazy people out there, let's be honest. And I laugh sometimes at your replies to people and that. Is there certain days, Willie, where you're more up for that than others in terms of taking people on?
Yeah, well, I've actually stopped, Brendan, if you see, like, anybody that comes back trying to, you know, give abuse or whatever. I used to kind of engage with those people, but they're complete knuckleheads and you don't get anywhere with them. And Twitter's gone so toxic, like, everything is basically Celtic or Rangers. Like, you see it now with Sinn Féin and Fine Gael. Like, there's people following these political parties on Twitter and they're actually abusing each other, supporting these political parties like football teams. Like, every topic has turned either black or white. You're either there or you're there. We hate you, you hate them. And Twitter is, you know, behind it all. I think it's a completely and utterly toxic environment. And if it didn't kind of need it for work a little bit, it would definitely... It definitely, for your mental health, I think it's important to stay off it as much as possible.
Yeah, well,
there's nothing productive on it anymore, Brendan. You can't even joke. You can't even joke now, but or tweet, because people misinterpret your tweet. They quote tweet it to their followers, and then you're getting grief off something that you actually didn't really even say. It's gone really bad.
And as well as that, Willie, I think the ability to explain exactly what your point is on Twitter can get lost. It's different if me and you were sitting somewhere and you brought up a big point, it was something we talked it out. What you said at the very start mightn't be exactly what you mean, and then, as you say, somebody might pull out a sentence in that and try and hammer you for it.
Well, that's it. And you don't know the tone of what's being said. So it could be tongue in cheek. But obviously, when you read it, you know, it's not, obviously, with some of the intelligence levels on Twitter, they can't, you know, they're not able to tell whether it's tongue in cheek or whether you're really being serious. And then that gets messy. And it is. I'm hoping by the time my children grow up that Twitter, people will laugh at Twitter. People will laugh at it won't be cool. It'll be losers arguing.
Yeah.
You know, like, you would hope that's the way it's going to go.
Yeah. Funny you mentioned mental health here, really, because I've said that to Dras a few times, that there's certain days where you might be up for a bit of a rammy. That's why I said that to you. And then there are other days, I don't think it's good for the head that if people are under an attack. Now, I found odd time on Twitter, and it's very rarely ever happened to me. I don't be on it that much, Willie, that somebody might have come at me about something, and then I come back at them and kind of explained it. And then they're like, oh, okay, I understand. And there's almost a wee bit of relief that the guy's not, as you said, a knucklehead. And he understands when you come back to him and said, listen, this is what I meant or whatever. And it could be one random guy you've never know, you'll obviously never see, you'll never meet. But there is that tension there. Once you get locked into it, I think we come back to the mental health thing. And I think for everybody, Willie, it's a dangerous thing online to be over and back like that. And you're right. I can understand the negativity of it all. Like, to me, everything's lighthearted that's on there. I couldn't go on there and be serious about something anyway, because I think those points of view are kind of personal to me, and I think, well, what odds about it? But the difference is with sport, people do get very serious about it. Whenever, to me, you know, if Donegal lose a game, I'm disappointed. But like I say, the Cavan game there, you go down there and say, well, listen, the better team won. I'd be very pragmatic about things again. But I think a lot of people don't have that. You know, it's kind of one way or the other.
But these are people on Twitter, and you remember, most of the country are not on Twitter. And you remember, like, I mean, you could walk into a bar and see people from your town, and, you know, you could see a group of people over in the corner, and you say, Jesus, I can't stand those people, I'm not going anywhere near them. But one of them could be giving you grief on Twitter, and because you don't know them, you almost think this fella's okay, you know, and I'm getting, you know, justified abuse. Whereas if you actually knew who these people were, they're probably complete losers, which you wouldn't care less about. But Twitter legitimizes everybody, like, almost like, you know, when people are attacking you on Twitter, they could be the complete loser from school, you know, that nobody liked, oversensitive people that no one played with, and they're giving you grief. I think a lot of people that get these things trending and are, you know, are oversensitive, these people are the losers from school and are the losers in your town. To be honest, a lot of these, you know, issues on Twitter, I don't speak about them to the people I meet in my normal life. I don't have those same opinions even on GEA, like when people are losing their minds about different things. I don't know who these people are, or did they just act this out online? Who knows? But anyway, as long as they're just there, we might ignore them.
At the end of the day, it gave us great entertainment around Donald Trump. So thank you, Twitter, for giving voice.
The V, on a more lighter note, with getting off Twitter, what about Jim McGuinness's outfit the other night on Sky? Did you see it?
I didn't actually. I was out and about. I didn't see it. He always had that wee dapper style. Maybe when he was away.
I wouldn't call this dapper now. I wouldn't call this dapper.
Controversial. No.
Confused, I would.
Confused. I must look out for this, Willie. I didn't see it now, in fairness. I must look out for that. Did it put you off his analysis, or did he have anything?
No, to be fair, his analysis is good. I have to say, Sky's analysis this year has been much better without Brian Kearney and without Rachel Wise. Rachel Wise always looks like she's absolutely terrified of the conversation going somewhere, because she wouldn't have any, you know, back knowledge of GEA. It always looks scripted. The new lady, Grainne McIlwain, is excellent. She gets the conversation flowing. Stair Donaghy's excellent. McGuinness, to be fair, is very good as well. Mm. And there's a little bit of debate. And then they go down to Peter. And instead of having Brian Kearney feeding him with questions, Peter just does it all on his own. And we know he's brilliant. So for me, I don't know about you, I like the crowd noises on Sky for the football as well. It gives a little bit of atmosphere. Yeah. I don't know. I actually prefer... the Sky coverage to the RTE coverage at the moment.
Aye. Sometimes when I'm doing it, I don't look at the pundits in, because I do look at them a bit, but I always like to kind of watch a game myself. I feel like I'm taking their points of view then if we're going to discuss a game, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's true, and you don't want to go down that road, because if you analyse that the same way as McGuinness analysed it, you will double guess yourself and say, well, it looked like I'm copying what he said.
You know what I mean?
Because obviously McGuinness's analysis would be a lot more respected than mine and yours. Yeah. So let's put it that way.
Yeah. And well, you see the whole year, you know, the strange year that it was. What did you make to the likes of, you know, the club championship getting the focus that it was and being played in the summer? I thought that was brilliant in many ways in terms of respecting the club game again. Is that something you'd like to see going into next year? You know, a huge bulk of the season being given exclusively to club?
Yeah, I obviously we'd like that, and that's going to happen. The All-Irelands next year are going to be in July. But what I don't like is club going first, and I see some people, you know, suggesting that. And I don't see why they would want to do that. Like, I mean, if the club goes first, you have all this mess about county managers maybe training one night a week during the club season, you know, and keeping them.
Yeah.
The county managers are more powerful, so it's not better get the inter-county played, have them exclusively with the intercounty, and then you have the club season from August straight through to December, you know, to finish it out, All-Ireland Finals in Croke Park, and you don't have any county manager annoying the club players from August on. You know, you still have it a little bit messy if you put the club before the county. I think it works a lot cleaner if you do the county first, finish it in July, and then look, I mean, you look at it, you've got May, June, July, really good months weather-wise for the inter-county, and then you have August, September, you know, club get two of the best, you know, months weather-wise as well for the club championships, then October, November, December, finish it out, which it has been as well. So, like, I mean, I think that schedule works an awful lot better.
So as it stands now, Willie, it's a split season then?
It's going to be a split season next year, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that worked so well. I think everybody's on the same page on that now. And it actually took this pandemic to make people understand that, which is crazy. People have been campaigning for that for a long time.
Yeah, and this, as you know, we've had it here. The power of the manager is unbelievable. We've seen it here for years, even in Donegal, and the pressure that's put on everybody then, because it's like the county board have to back the manager. The manager then, let's be honest, doesn't really care less about the club championship. He just wants his players for his team. And you can understand that as well. But while that latitude is there, I mean, we've seen it with all the, as you say, the sneaky training sessions in when nobody's supposed to be training. But of course, county players have to train at a higher level. Well, so you can understand nobody wants to come in to the season cold. But as you said, it leaves too many question marks out there. And again, we're pulling our players apart, you know, and particularly, say, our club county players, you know, they're kind of caught in the mix. And as you know, Willie, from our time playing, already the fun and enjoyment of the game has been almost eradicated in terms of what it used to be for the dangling of a place in Division One or a potential provincial championship or a run in the Super Eights, you know. And our players keep committing to this when we've kind of ironed out all the kind of joy or fun or wee bit of downtime they might have in the season.
Well, I think, yeah, maybe the new schedule, because as we know, you know, I think January is going to be a pre-season month, and then we'll start up again. I think next season is going to be a bit different because the All-Irelands run so late, so the league is going to start up the end of February. But you're going to have an inter-county season of about 6 months. So, yeah, that will be intense. But then, you know, it's 9 months, you know, as it is now, and maybe you could go 11, 12 when you bring the pre-season into it and all that, and the commitment levels being asked for. But when the players go back to their clubs from August, you know, straight through to December, you know, we know club is a lot more relaxed than inter-county. So I think the inter-county players will enjoy that 4 or 5 months, you know, of their lives a little bit more, get back then in December, January for pre-season again, and then have the maybe really intense 4 or 5 months for most counties. You know, a lot of counties won't make it till July. And I don't mind that. Like, I mean, I always remember when I was playing, like, I could probably do it for 2 or 3 months, you know, a good bit of commitment and all that. I just didn't like having to do it for, you know, the whole year round or being, you know, too much being asked of you. So I think I think a lot of the issues, you know, around the GAA all came from the schedule, you know, the championship structure. The inter-county season's too long. All those things. Now, if we shorten it to maybe 5-6 months, you know, let them go flat out. Because, you know, if you're being honest, in the middle of June, there'll only be 4 teams left in it anyway. So most players won't have that 6 month, you know, really intense experience. They'll have 3-4, and I could probably live with that. Maybe you couldn't. You might want 1 month.
Well, just switching you over to the rules there, the black card, the sin bin black card, and the mark. I spoke to you there the other week just about that. You were saying how little the mark had been used by the teams that were in the semi, and as well, I think the sin bin has been a good addition to the black card. There was a lot of controversy about it. Was it a good or bad thing? Was it working? But certainly, the mark hasn't changed anything. I mean, if you look at the record scoring yesterday in the semi-final between Mayo and Tip, there's no sign of a mark.
No sign of a mark. Now, you'd have to say Tipperary played a lovely style, though. They played some lovely diagonal balls in, and now they mightn't have been coming from outside the 45, but they definitely had a clear tactic to try and get it in good and early to Quinlivan and to Conor Sweeney. And I thought that, let's be honest, they had 3 goal chances in the first 10 minutes from direct diagonal balls. Mm. Like, I mean, and you contrast that with Cavan. Like, I mean, I'm so disappointed in Cavan. Like, what were they coming up to Dublin? They had Thomas Galligan and Conor Madden inside. You had to wait up to the 20-minute mark for them to even attempt the ball into Galligan. And it was a desperate ball out over the end line. And then the other only decent kick pass went into Conor Madden. It was from a free from Martin Riley. And Johnny Cooper fouled him. Mm. 2 times in a full half, where that's a clear advantage that Cavan could potentially have. And you just wonder what Cavan were thinking going up to play Dublin. They left Owen Merchant as a free man instead of going up to Dublin and saying, Jesus, who on that full back line could we target? Owen Merchant's obviously a brilliant player, but he's very small and he wouldn't be that strong. So they bring back Chris Conway as a completely ineffective sweeper and leave Owen Merchant with a free roll. Some of the tactical decisions with Mickey Graham, you'd have to scratch your head. You really would. Mm. And you contrast that to David Power and the way Tipperary approached the game against Mayo, it was chalk and cheese, because underdogs won't win games without scoring goals and getting that ball in there, you know? And, like, I mean, Cavan coming up against Dublin to try and beat them at a running game, I'm sure Dublin were just laughing at them in third gear.
Yeah, certainly. And tell me, well, might it be a thing for Mayo then, the fact that Dublin still haven't had to face diagonal balls or a strong forward presence in there this whole season, basically, in the championship, that Mayo could come and bring that dimension to it?
Oh, no, Mayo will. Mayo have great variety to their attack. They'll kick some, they'll run some other ones. You know, Mayo are a very good team. Like, I mean, and definitely Dublin not having been tested is going to be a disadvantage. You just wonder if Mayo, like, I mean, if they're coughing up goal chances like that, Jesus Christ, what Conn O'Callaghan and Kilkenny and Rock and these fellas would do to them, you'd worry. You know, like, I mean, because, like, Dublin will play a more direct game against Mayo because they know Mayo don't play a full-time sweeper and they'll allow that kick pass. So Dublin will have to change their style. Dublin, actually, Brennan, I don't know about you, they're actually very boring to watch when they're playing a team like Cavan. Like, they're just methodical and they're over and back and they're waiting for that incisive run to give the killer hand pass and then it's a point. But, you know, the minute or so before that incisive hand pass, God, you know, it's a little bit boring. And Dublin are better than that. They just kind of, you know, if Dublin play Kerry, they're exciting to watch. If they play Mayo, they're exciting to watch. If they play, no offence, an Ulster team, they tend to really kind of, you know, just go through the motions.
And, Wally, there's this kind of lull after these Dublin games. It's like, oh, here we go again. You're right. There's nothing exciting about the game. And you know, you're just like, oh, come on. Is this where football's going? And listen, well, not to be negative, because you remember where football was going there for a while in terms of defensive tactics and defence and trying to out-defend the team. I mean, particularly, I suppose, 5-23-13. I mean, that is completely off the chart stuff. I mean, we should celebrate the fact that teams are going for it, and certainly you have two teams that are going to go at each other in this final. And if anything, I think that Dublin is going to probably play it a bit coyer against Mayo and try and suck them in to hitting them in a bit of a counter attack.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Dublin don't really like those tactics. I think they just use them because it's very efficient against certain teams. But anyway, the thing about it is teams are still dropping 12 players behind the ball. Yeah. The difference in the game now is the likes of Mayo and Dublin, they push everybody up on those players. So now no one has a sweeper or a covering player. Every man has a man. It's just in one half of the field. And Dublin and Mayo are more than happy on occasion for that to happen. You know, and then, you know, you can't double up on Dublin at that stage because every man has a man that they're, you know, running around following, and that's how Dublin are able to dismantle these teams. Whereas if you don't commit everybody forward, you leave a couple of defenders back, well then you're giving, you know, Cavan two extra defenders who can rush out to Fenton when he's coming running in or rush out to Robbie McDade. Cavan didn't really have that because the change in the game now, you remember Donegal and Tyrone in the Ulster finals, desperate games to watch. Like Donegal could be Donegal could be, and Tyrone could be leaving. Say Murphy, McBrearty are in. They'd have two markers and Tyrone could have three more covering them. How are they meant to get through Donegal on the other side when they're being so conservative at the back? You know, I think that's how the game has changed. Teams are moving everyone into attack and it's taken away the zonal defenders off the more defensive team, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and thank God for that, Willie.
We're
on the right way. Willie, thank you so much. Just for the last word, hey, are you giving a glimmer of hope for Mayo?
I've given a glimmer of hope for Mayo. It's been an absolutely crazy year and Mayo are an absolutely crazy team. Wouldn't it be ironic if Mayo, with the crazy support they have, they end up winning. Wouldn't it be Mayo's luck? They end up winning the All-Ireland and they're not even allowed to bring the crowd home.
I think they'll take that. I think they'll take that, Willie.
They probably will.
We'll head for Castlebar. That's Joe Doddy would have a big broadcast, I think, down there that night. Willie, listen, 100%, my man. Good to talk to you, lad. I'll catch up with you soon. And now, folks, I'm joined by a lady from a famous Donegal footballing household, being she is the daughter of Sean Ferreter. It is Joanne Dawson. How are you today, Joanne?
Hi, Brendan. How are you?
Joanne, you, of course, are a big Donegal supporter. You're based up in Dublin and you were given the, I'll not say enviable job, but the big task of running our One a House in Dublin draw. How did that all come about?
Big challenge. So the county board approached me in August of last year. I had previously run a golf classic. Dad was president in Dunfanaghy at the time, Dunfanaghy Golf Club. So we'd run a golf classic in July, which was a big success. And then I got a call about 4 weeks later with this suggestion of a house draw and would I be interested in coming on board to form a committee and basically get on with the challenge of selling these tickets. So I agreed. I thought about it and I said to myself, this is going to be an interesting challenge. So I agreed to take it on and it really all started from there.
So it can be dangerous doing a good job for somebody in a charity way, Joanne. Then you get asked to do more.
You've hit the nail on the head.
Fair play to you, because it was a massive undertaking. And of course, in the middle of COVID, then things got pushed back and loads of question marks on the right way to push through this huge job of selling 15,000 tickets.
Yeah, look, it was difficult. I mean, when we started out, we formed our committee in August. We then went about the task of actually getting the property, then getting everything ready to launch the campaign, which was launched the weekend of the inter-county final there in October of last year. All of a sudden we hit the new year and this COVID situation happened. It made it very difficult for us to forecast ahead in terms of, you know, once we established that the draw needed to be deferred, trying to forecast ahead to when was the most suitable time was a bit of a challenge for us, all right, because we were stuck in the middle of a lockdown at that point. So we felt that the best thing to do was to try and move it out further into the calendar year without going into a new calendar year in order to get the task completed. So that's what we did. But it was a difficult decision to have to defer it because obviously it was we were putting all of this hard work into it, but we realised that there was just no possibility that we could keep going with it while the country was in a complete point of lockdown at that stage, you know.
Mm. And of course you had the backup of the man, the myth, the legend, the moustache, our county chairman, Mick McGrath.
Yeah, we spent lots of hours counselling each other on the phone over the last 14 months, yeah.
He's some man for one man, Joanna. Do you enjoy catching up with him? He just nothing's a problem. You know, we everything can be sorted and let's go. He's a great attitude.
Well, look, I suppose he has a great appetite for the county and the success of the county, and that was a driving force behind all of this as well. So, I mean, we both worked very well together. We were fortunate that we had a really, really good, committed, hard-working committee as well. So, you know, the whole lot of us worked together and everybody came up with different ideas. People had different jobs within the committee, different parts of the county to focus on. So we broke it down amongst ourselves so that everybody had their own kind of role within the committee themselves, and it worked out really well for us.
Yeah. And tell me, John, I know the whole official money isn't back in. Is there a rough idea of the profit from the draw?
No, Brendan, I won't be able to give you that yet, simply because there's still, obviously we have to go through the stage now of completing all of the prizes, and right, we have to do a full audit of the accounts as well. I'm sure you can probably appreciate, you were there on Friday yourself, you saw the work that was going in until 5 minutes before the broadcast,
yeah.
So in terms of doing an audit, we just haven't had the time to do that yet. The next 2 weeks will allow us to do that, and we hope to have the figures for convention on the 14th of December.
Yeah, listen, I was honoured. Listen, they draw out a ticket. It's a momentous thing, John. It's a real kind of, I suppose, a boost in the Donegal going into this training centre, which is phenomenal. I mean, we were kind of joking back in the wee canteen there. Myself and other people were drawing out the tickets just about where we had started the train in Drumbow. I mean, it was just two pitches in a field. It wasn't even a proper football pitch. And everyone was training up there, seniors, minors, hurlers. I mean, it was a disaster. Mickey Moran landed to go over Donegal, and he was a real ball-playing manager and coach. And he took one look at Drumbow and he says, no, I'm not training my team here. And thankfully, Robert Emmett's Castle Finn, which I always have to say, I mean, it was huge of them to loan us their pitch so we could do in a good, sandy, solid pitch so we could do all our ball drills and our training. But, you know, from that jump of Drumbow to Watson Convoy, it's absolutely phenomenal, Joe.
Yeah, look, I've only had a conversation with my own dad recently about this, and, I mean, he tells stories himself of where he did his training back in the 60s. But, I mean, you know, there's a huge debate raging this weekend about the dominance of the Dublin team. And, you know, if teams are expected to prepare and succeed at that type of level, and, I mean, although it's not professional, it's semi-professional at this stage, although still, you know, very much a volunteer-based organisation. But, you know, players need to have those facilities to be able to prepare for those big games. The days of running in and out of, you know, metal cabins on the side of a pitch are long gone at this point. And, I mean, you've seen it yourself. You were there on Friday. You know, the facilities that are going to be there now for all the teams for the future, you know, it's a great achievement for us to have been able to contribute towards that, but it's vitally important for the teams for preparation for these competitions as well, you know.
It's a massive leg up. You know, for years I've been up at Gervahi, up at Tyrone's and that, and I can just imagine there's young players coming in there, and you mentioned Dublin. There's such a mindset of professionalism with them, so if you haven't got the grounds and the ability to kind of match that, you're never going to catch up to the likes of Dublin. So it's a massive thing. John, you're involved, of course, in Club Donegal, which is the Dublin fundraising arm of it all. And there's obviously a big push from our ex-Donegal people up there, which is vital to the county to keep things ticking over?
Oh, it is. I mean, look, I'm only involved just in the last, you know, couple of years, but you can see the importance in terms of Donegal people living outside of the county. And, you know yourself, you've been to the race nights in Leopardstown. All of this stuff is required in order to get the money together. I mean, you know, it takes a huge amount of money, to run a team, but also to provide facilities for them. And, you know, so it boils down to having people living outside of the county as well as inside the county. And that's why Club Donegal would have come together a couple of years ago to organise events such as the race night. You know, there have been other Christmas lunches and in the Harcourt Hotel and the Ivy Garden Hotel in Dublin. So all of that is really, really important in terms of trying to get money in to keep things ticking over on a year-to-year basis.
Brilliant, brilliant, Joanne. Well, listen, I would just like to say, as a Donegal man, massive congrats to you on what you did and your team in the Win Your House draw. It was a huge success. And it'll be interesting to see these figures coming in and see what the change that'll be for all our GAA players at the training centre up there. Joanne, thank you very much for joining us this
evening. Thanks for having me on the show, Brendan.
And that's a wrap. Show 39 for the year here on the DL Debate. We're going to skip next week and come back for the big final between Mayo and Dublin. The Mayo men dare to dream again. From this evening's show, I want to thank Kieran Whelan, Colin Parkinson and Joanne Dawson for their input. I want to thank Kenneth here for producing in studio. I'll speak to you in 2 weeks then.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Serving food you'll love in Sarah's Kitchen.